one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day if you're one of those people who wants to see a vital, vibrant, competitive Republican Party. Why is it such a great day to be a Republican? Well, because there was an incredible decision, unexpected, by one of the nation's leading publishers to actually keep ahead, go ahead with a contract with one of America's most prominent Republicans, and a very conservative Republican at that, and a big supporter of President Trump. Now, who's the politician and who's the publisher? We'll tell you. It's fascinating. And yes, it's a big victory. And there's also some good news on the purely political front. This posting over at Facebook under the headline, "I'm in." And then the rest of the message, "California has been my home for nearly 50 years. I came here because I knew that anyone, regardless of their background or station in life, could turn their dreams into reality. But for the past decade, we have seen the glimmer of the Golden State reduced by one-party rule that places politics over progress and special interests over people. Sacramento needs an honest leader with a clear vision. This campaign will be powered by everyday Californians who deserve leadership that is accountable to them, not the special interests in Sacramento." And it's a Caitlyn Jenner. And they're marketing already. I went to the website and was looking around for policy positions because I know that Caitlyn Jenner has been a Republican far longer than she has been Caitlyn. Even when she was Bruce Jenner, she was a Republican and a libertarian-leaning Republican and the kind of person that Californians wouldn't ordinarily consider. But she is also one of the biggest celebrities around who has made an estimated $100 million on reality television, having a reality show of her gender reassignment or, pardon me, gender confirmation process and much, much more. What is Caitlyn Jenner running on? Well, one of the things she's running on is recalling Gavin Newsom. And see, this is what is good about this. There are all kinds of candidates, just as there were when Gray Davis was facing recall. And the more candidates who come in, especially candidates who are going to attract their own following, their own loyal voters who are going to vote for recall because they want to support a candidate like Caitlyn Jenner. You may remember when Gray Davis, the governor of California, was recalled and replaced by Arnold Schwarzenegger. There are all kinds of candidates who had jumped in. Arianna Huffington was one of the candidates who had jumped in. And there were all sort of Hollywood celebrities and out-of-work actors and activists. And fine, the more people who come in to vote for Caitlyn Jenner, the more votes that will be against Gavin Newsom.
Is it time to step in and take control?
Well, yeah, well, that's what happened last time. The website for Caitlyn Jenner has T-shirts, sweatshirts, mugs, caps. It all says Caitlyn for California. And there's a picture of her sort of standing on the horizon, looking very formidable. And obviously a decathlon athlete father of six. He did father them. He is now their mother. So look, all of this is fascinating. People are fascinated by the Jenners, by the Kardashians. I mean, look, Kylie Jenner is a billionaire, right? So, I think this is not a good day for Governor Gavin Newsom. The other bit of good news here has to do with Mike Pence. And There's this. The chief executive of Simon & Schuster. Simon & Schuster has been canceling things right and left. They canceled their contract with Josh Hawley. You may remember the senator from Missouri, and they did that because Josh Hawley was instrumental in challenging the victory at the polls by Joe Biden and wanting to block the certification of election results that had already been certified in the states following the legal process. Now, Josh Hawley's book has now been picked up, I believe, by Regnery, a conservative publisher. But here's the story. The chief executive of Simon & Schuster said the company will go ahead with plans to publish two books by former president, Vice President Mike Pence, despite calls from many SNS employees to cancel the deal. CEO Jonathan Karp, rejecting pressure from some employees and bucking a trend, urged employees to embrace diversity of thought in the publishing world. Well, that's an encouraging development. Simon & Schuster had announced in early April it would publish an autobiography and another book by Pence. Quote, as a publisher in this polarized era, we have experienced outrage from both sides of the political divide and from different constituencies and groups, Carr wrote to his employees. But we come to work each day to publish, not cancel. Hear that? Which is the most extreme decision a publisher can make, and one that runs counter to the very core of our mission, to publish a diversity of voices and perspectives. We will therefore proceed in our publishing agreement with Vice President Mike Pence. An employee-led petition had argued that Simon & Schuster would be making money. Imagine that. That's partially why publishers exist, right? They're corporations. They want to sell more books, enough books at least, to allow them to make a profit. Is that terrible? No, it's appropriate. In any event, the petition said you would be making money off a central figure of a presidency that advocated for racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, anti-blackness, xenophobia, misogyny, ableism, Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, and violence. Whoa. Further, the petition said Pence himself was guilty of advocating for legalized discrimination against LGBTQ people, eroding the teaching of science in favor of Christian theology in public-funded schools, and denying bodily autonomy to pregnant people. This is, it seems to me, a very, very welcome development. Not so welcome, the idea that Stacey Abrams, who is almost surely going to be running for governor of Georgia again against Brian Kemp, the fine incumbent governor of Georgia, regardless of what President Trump says about him or thinks about him, Stacey Abrams was on Joy Reid today. And she was talking about racism in America. And she was actually saying that your vote this time could stop men from murdering women of color. How is that going to actually work? Again, if I could vote, if there was an item on the ballot, a referendum that said, do you want to see men not murdering women of color anymore or not murdering anybody anymore? Yeah, I'd vote for that. So how does that work? How does that work, really? And again, this started with a conversation about Asian hate being on the rise. We will get to that contribution by Stacey Abrams and others who say that 1,000 people have been murdered by police in less than a year. Is that even vaguely true?
You know, the... Yeah.
Michael Medved show today. A big day on the markets. The financial markets did very well indeed today. We're back up above 34,000 with the Dow. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 228 points, which is awfully good news. The S&P 500 up 45. Okay, with the markets doing so well, I do know that most people think we are going to be heading, despite perhaps not because of some actions that President Biden is talking about. It's basically if we turn the corner on the pandemic, things should be getting better around the world. And it is widely expected by economists everywhere. Go to our crowd at michaelmedved.com and look at some of the most promising high-tech companies, startups, in which you can participate. There's no obligation. This costs you nothing. And it's fascinating to see some of these technological innovations that are currently making their way around the world. Just go to our crowd at michaelmedved.com and you can sort through some of these changes that are going to be very profitable for people and could be you. They are not looking for big whale investors, people to put in hundreds of thousands of dollars. This is for ordinary folks who would like to participate in some of the most exciting financial opportunities around. Check it out. Go to michaelmedved.com. Click on the banner for Our Crowd. That's my brother's company, headquartered in Jerusalem, Israel. In any event, let me go quickly to Stacey Abrams. Stacey Abrams, I am fascinated by her, actually, because she's one of those people who you wouldn't think would be such a charismatic figure, such a charismatic communicator. But she is. And she ran a very strong race for governor of Georgia. She lost, even though she never conceded, like certain presidential candidates have never conceded. But Stacey Abrams is planning to run again for governor of Georgia. And so she was talking with Joy Reid about hate crimes against Asians, and particularly about those horrible murders in Atlanta by that 21-year-old killer who went from one massage parlor to another, and six of his eight victims happened to be Asian Americans. And here she is talking about racism in America and how to fix it. Listen.
Seen, you know, the Asian American community suffer this horrific attack. You know, obviously we've seen ongoing police brutality issues. There's still cases that are open there. And these communities are facing these multiple stressors, right? And I'm wondering how you think that winds up intersecting as people like you from Fair Fight and others are coming in and saying, get back and get into the political process.
Well, one of the most important ways to engage voters, there is absolutely the responsibility of registration, but it's connecting the dots. It's making certain, as we saw with these horrific murders, that if we do not have the right people in power, then they will not stop men from murdering women of color. If we do not have the right people in power, they will not take action to protect our environment. If we do not have the right people in power, district attorneys will not charge, and police officers will be left to immunize themselves from accountability for their actions.
Okay, does any of this make sense? She says if we do not have the right people in power, politicians will not stop men from murdering women of color. First of all, there has never, ever been any evidence that has been generated that the killer in Atlanta, who I believe a killer like that certainly deserves the death penalty, but that he was motivated by racism or by anti-Asian hatred. Look, the Senate of the United States passed almost unanimously. They voted 98-1 for an anti-Asian hate crimes bill. And it was one that was co-introduced by two female Asian American senators, by Tammy Duckworth of Illinois and Mazie Hirono of Hawaii. And you know what? When you look at the bill, it's fine. Basically, what it does is it asks for more attention to this, more of a review of why it's going on, better reporting. It would appoint someone in the Justice Department who'd be responsible for this, and giving reports, and I think they're credible, of a rise in Asian, anti-Asian hate incidents. Okay, fine. It's a good bill. Josh Hawley of Missouri was the only senator to vote against it, because he said he thought the bill was overly broad. Okay, fine. This bill will probably almost certainly be passed almost unanimously in the House as well. But the question I would ask is, when she talks about this, Stacey Abrams, and she says that if you don't vote for the right candidates, killing won't stop, how will voting for the right candidates stop the killings? We have every year in the United States thousands, it's actually about 15,000 murders. And we have more suicides than that. How does voting for the right person stop that? If you want to try to answer that question, give me a call, 1-800-955-1776. There's also this. With all of the positive reactions to the verdict in the Chauvin case, reactions that make clear that, yes, this showed that the system worked. Reactions like those by Tim Scott that I just read you, the senator from South Carolina. There's this reaction from a newly elected Representative Cori Bush from Missouri, a Democrat, on The View. Listen.
We were thinking, will a police officer be held accountable for his actions for killing another person with a knee on the neck that was actually on camera? You know, we were wondering, like, will that happen? That is not justice in any way. Justice is where people are able to live in this country without their being, without their existence, their very existence, being the color of their skin, making them an automatic threat to law enforcement. And since we don't have that in this country, and people have been trying to figure it out for so long, you know what? My push is that we defund our police departments. And I know people don't want to hear, oh, we don't want to talk about defunding.
Okay. She goes on to talk about what she means about defunding. And again, and goes on to give a totally spurious statistic. We will get to that. And then also to talking about climate change and how we're all going to die soon. Now, if you talk about within 120 years, yeah, we're all going to die. Yes, that's true. But we're all going to die about climate change? That this was a supposition by a United States member of Congress. We'll get to that coming up on the MedVed Show. Show, Representative Cori Bush, who is either potentially or already intentionally a member of the squad in the Congress of the United States. She is a newly elected representative Democrat, very liberal Democrat from Missouri. She was on TV, on The View, where she got, of course, a warm reception from the hosts on ABC TV. And she was talking about why she supports defunding of the police. She clarifies what she meant by defunding. This is clip 4B.
But when we talk, I want people to be clear about what I mean when I say defunding the police. I'm saying demilitarize, and this is Cori. I'm not speaking for the entire Black Lives Matter movement. But when I say defund the police, I'm saying that our militarized police force forces across this country, I'm saying $150,000 spent on an MRAP or $300,000. I'm saying tear gas and rubber bullets and stockpiling SWAT gear. I'm saying noise munitions, all of those things that we have in our police departments that hurt people like us. And I know because I'm someone who has been hurt by those things. If we remove that and take that money and put it into our education system, put it into making sure our unhoused community members are sheltered, put it into mental health resources. That's what we're saying, because that is what is going to make our community safer. Because I'll say this, almost 1,000 people have been murdered by police, have been killed by police since George Floyd lost his life. Almost 1,000.
Okay, that is a ridiculous statistic. And if there's any fairness in the world, she'll get 4 Pinocchios for it. It isn't anywhere near 1,000 people who have been murdered by police since George Floyd was killed. The maximum number that you could talk about unarmed suspects who were killed in the last year, and this is unarmed suspects of all races, the majority of whom are white. Most suspects who get killed by police who are unarmed are white. And you're talking about maybe 150. The reports appear to be in terms of black suspects who have been shot by police who are unarmed since George Floyd. The best numbers are under 30. And no, it's not 1,000. And yes, it does matter. And when you talk about 1,000 police having murdered George Floyd, look, it's very, very important to put this thing in the right context. And that, by the way, is something I wrote a column about specifically for our newsletter, which is going out today. You can sign up for it. It's free. The Michael Medved newsletter. Go to michaelmedved.com. Sign up for it. Costs nothing. I have a piece today about putting the satisfaction and, for some people, the elation over the George Floyd, Derek Chauvin verdict, putting that in proper context, which is very important. Peggy Noonan does the same thing. She writes about it beautifully. And she says that people living stressed lives need the police most. It is the police they rely on when things turn bad. This is a column that's coming out tomorrow in the Wall Street Journal. We aren't being sufficiently sensitive to the position of the police after decades of being accused of reflexive brutality and racism. We should be concerned about demoralization, about officers who will leave, about young people who could have become great cops never joining the force, about early retirements of good men and good women. We should be concerned that more policemen will come to see their own priority as protecting the job, the benefits, the pensions for their family. So they'll quietly slow down, do nothing when they should do something. That they'll put on the uniform each day, not only thinking, I protect the public, but also I must protect myself from the public. Which means they won't be good at their jobs anymore. She says this, if I ran the world, we wouldn't be diverting funds from the police. We'd be spending more to expand and deepen their training, literally lengthen it by a year or two. Deepen their patience, their sense of proportion, their knowledge, because they are so important to us. Let's go quickly to John in Aberdeen, Washington. John, you're on the Michael Medved Show.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me. Stacey Abrams, cutting to the chase. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening to you.
Sorry, I just can't hear you. Apologize. But thank you. Stacey Abrams, when I hear her say that, I hear her say, if we elect GOP, your party, Republicans, your party, conservatives, your ilk, we will not have comprehensive gun laws and comprehensive gun education, so we'll have murders. Well, if we elect GOP, your party, we won't have comprehensive mental health coverage in America, the suicides. If we elect the GOP, we won't have the stable society that she wants to have. Thus, we'll have killings of Asian Americans and African Americans. I'm not done. If I can finish.
Okay, but let me just interrupt you for a moment. You'll be able to continue. What makes you think that we would all of a sudden be able to lower crime with new gun legislation, particularly if we're defunding police, if we're taking money away from police? Who's going to enforce the new gun laws?
The sheriffs. The sheriffs.
But wait, they're police.
We've gone over this before. You know, and you don't
and,
want
and again,
this,
when they talk about defunding police,
there,
they're not saying just defund the police departments. They're saying defund law enforcement generally, right?
They're saying defund the police, not law enforcement in general. They're saying defund the police, and I'm saying fund from the police, the sheriff. That's where you're not letting me. Well, that's a completely different topic. We're still talking about Stacey Abrams and electing GOP.
Okay, yeah, and I'm
and
talking to you
GOP,
about what
we'll
evidence she said.
Society.
Hold on.
We'll have
Hold
a selfish
on.
Society of people who don't care of and getting that data that you want.
Okay, I'm all for getting data. The difficulty here is that what she said is that it basically, if we elect the right people, then we're going to stop murders. And why would it be that under, it was basically under Barack Obama that we began to take a turn a little bit for the worse? And now it's full out. We have a difficulty with a rise in crime in the United States. Why do you think that is? Is it because we elected the wrong people? John?
Hello?
No, not there. Yes, hello? John? It's all right. Okay, the point over here is, look, elections are important. But the idea that if you vote right, you stop murders, that, it seems to me, is absurd. One of the things we do need is more attention to mental health. And yes, and by the way, probably agree with John in Aberdeen, some of the gun legislation that I think is important is gun legislation to be able to red flag people and have it go through and be processed so that you don't allow guns to be sold legally into the hands of people who are dangerous and insane. And so much of what we have seen recently does have to do with the mental illness in industry, which is exactly something that John was referring to. But part of the legislation that's going to be necessary there is going to involve more policing, not less. And the idea of commitment, which we used to have in this country, today it's very difficult to put someone away from society for a period of time, more than 72 hours, even if they represent an imminent danger to themselves or to others. Speaking of imminent danger, I mentioned the certification by Simon & Schuster of the two new books by Mike Pence. There's also an imminent danger of some further sanity, even among liberal journalists. Where? We'll tell you coming up on The Medved Show.
The Michael Medved Show. MichaelMedved.com. All across America.
It's open, it's expansive, it's welcoming, it's filled with light.
This is The Michael Medved Show.
And on The Michael Medved Show, I mentioned earlier this truly outstanding column by Peggy Noonan. And Peggy, writing in The Wall Street Journal, the column appears tomorrow, so people who don't get the weekend journal probably won't read it, but it's truly worth considering because it seems to me the most balanced and perceptive reaction yet to not just the trial of Derek Chauvin, but the whole issue of police brutality and reform. And she writes that regarding the trial, there were elements of inspiration. It was a unanimous verdict from a diligent jury that had spent the trial taking notes. Members were varied in every way: race, ethnicity, sex, profession, neighborhood, relatives of cops, admirers of Black Lives Matter. Their ages spanned from the 20s to the 60s. They came to peaceful and emphatic agreement and spoke with one voice. And now we've got to get the other hard part right. The story shifts to Washington. Congress and the White House are engaged in trying to put together a bill to overhaul and regularize police practices, banning some, like chokeholds, limiting no-knock warrants, maybe imposing more liability risk on officers for misconduct. Senator Tim Scott is the Republican point man. He's been working on legislation since George Floyd's death. But he said he has been thwarted by Democrats in the election year, but is trying to forge a bipartisan agreement. It is important that this be done right, she says. There is a crisis in policing, and it's healthy to acknowledge it. But then she goes on to say this, that concerning the instance in Columbus, the story of Micaiah Bryant, which is another sad name that we've come to know, she, the 16-year-old girl who was shot in Columbus to prevent her from killing another girl. The most important words spoken in the Columbus altercation were in the 911 call from the house where the fighting began. So writes Peggy Noonan. The voice sounds like that of a young woman. There's a scream in the background. The caller says, "Someone is trying to stab us, and we need a police officer here now." And then she goes on and she says, "People living stressed lives need the police most. It is the police they rely on when things turn bad." And that's exactly why people who are honestly concerned about equality and fairness and decency, defunding the police, disestablishing the police, see, for wealthy people, yes, you can hire your own security guards if you're wealthy enough. You can take care of your own private police force in a gated community if that's where you live, whatever. But for ordinary middle-class people, for poor people, where else do you turn other than to the police? They're critical to us. And there was some common sense spoken about that from an unlikely source. We played some of this yesterday, but now there's more shocking common sense from Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo on CNN. They're talking about the killing of Micaiah Bryant, and they had this to say, 5A.
No matter what you see, as you see, justified or unjustified, there's a humanity at play.
I think it was like 7 seconds, 7 or 9 seconds that the officer had to react. It is tragic. It is terrible. But imagine if the woman in the pink was your loved one and the officer didn't do what he did. You could be mourning the death of that woman, that young lady in the pink. And again, police officers are trained to neutralize the threat.
You do not pass leather, which is what how they refer to, like, yeah, you know, coming out of the holster. Yeah. If you are not planning to neutralize a threat,
right,
and you must use equal or greater force.
Yeah.
So they're not taking out that gun to do anything but put somebody down.
But, right. And to neutralize the threat, which is, that's the training. I'm sorry.
You could rethink the training.
This is I 100% agree with that. And so that's the whole idea about figuring out what we do with police in this society and how police officers should be used and utilized. That's a whole nother conversation. But as it stands now, that's what it is.
Okay. As common sense from Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo, amazingly so. And well, I'll tell you where there was no common sense at all. We were speaking earlier in this show about mental illness and the contribution to all of this. There's a horrible crime overseas where mental illness was just used as an excuse for not holding the killer accountable. It's incredible. The highest court in France has ruled that the man who killed a woman, she was a physician and a mother, in 2017 in an anti-Semitic frenzy, cannot stand trial because he was in a state of mental delirium brought on by his consumption of marijuana. Kobili Traore, who has admitted to the killing and is in a psychiatric institution, beat Sarah Halimi, who is 65, before throwing her out the window of her Paris apartment with cries of Allahu Akbar, or God is great, and I kill the devil. Mr. Traore, who was 27 at the time, had been troubled by Ms. Halimi's mezuzah. Now, what a mezuzah is, it's a little piece of parchment that is usually put in some kind of decorative container that marks out the doorposts of Jewish homes. And yes, he had been troubled by the mezuzah, which, quote, amplified the frantic outburst of hate, according to one psychiatric report. The verdict, more than 4 years after the killing, ended judicial proceedings in France for the case. The verdict came after a lower court rejected a trial, and the Halimi family appealed. President Emmanuel Macron made an unusual personal intervention by calling for the case to have its day in court. Outrage in the large French Jewish community has accompanied the long failure to try Mr. Traore. In its ruling, the court noted that under French law, a person is not criminally responsible if suffering at the time of the event from psychic or neuropsychic disturbance that has eliminated all discernment or control over the acts. And even someone who, like Mr. Traore, enters a delirious state because of voluntary cannabis use cannot be tried. Is that outrageous? It seems to me outrageous. Mr. Traore, a neighbor of Ms. Halimi, was an immigrant from Mali. He was a drug dealer and a heavy, heavy pot smoker, the criminal investigation found. He pushed Ms. Halimi, a retired physician and mother of three, from a third-floor window in the Belleville district of Paris. It remains unclear whether she was already dead from his beating her before he threw her from the window. It is an unbelievable story. And it goes to, I think, one of the problems we have. Some of these horrific crimes that we've all witnessed. The totally meaningless killing in Boulder, Colorado. Now, we don't know what the purpose was, what the motive was, what even the thinking was of the killer, Mohammed Alisa, in that one was. But we don't really know what the motivation was in the killings in Atlanta. But with crimes that are so horrific and so gruesome, should the idea that the person is insane, we will see what happens with the Parkland shooter in Florida, who actually has a mental health record. I do think that one of the things we need to rethink is the idea of a very broad insanity defense. Because when you're perpetrating some of these awful crimes, there has to be accountability. Hashtag accountability. It seems to me important, crucial. I'll tell you what else is important and crucial is keeping abreast of the ongoing struggle to beat COVID-19. There are new guidelines for the J&J vaccine. What kind of patients are now being admitted? Because there are places in the country where cases are going up. We'll speak to two distinguished physicians coming up on the Michael Medved Show in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.